Well, it's been a big week for the Supreme Court. A lot of things going on. The faithless electors must vote accordingly in the Electoral College. The president's tax returns may be able to be seen by some, but there's a threshold that has to be met. And half of Oklahoma goes back to an Indian tribe. No big deal unless you live in, say, Tulsa, Oklahoma. Dr. Adam Carrington here, assistant professor of politics at Hillsdale College and the Van Andel Graduate School of Statesmanship. Doctor, how are you?
Doing well. Hope you're all also trying to stay cool, actually, in Michigan, which I thought didn't happen much.
You know, I've been pretty cool my whole life. I tell myself that. see how we're just going to turn that right there? At any rate, Doctor, let me ask you about this. I want to get to the faithless electors, but would you help me with the Oklahoma thing? Does half of Oklahoma now belong to an Indian reservation that it thought to have left in 1907? Or is it just the way state laws are applied? Help me here. Do we have 49 and a half states, or do we still have 50?
We still have 50. What this more means is that Congress just has to be specific when it makes a treaty with a Native American tribe. There's ways that it can sort of play with that or circumscribe it or make exceptions to it, but otherwise it has to stay to its terms. And all they really said is this has to do with a small number of criminal prosecutions in Oklahoma. So I wouldn't make too much of this. The court really tried to make sure that there were just small amounts where they were trying to make sure that they were faithful to this treaty that they had made, well over 100 years ago. So I think this is getting blown up a lot bigger than it is. It has a lot more to do with just specific Oklahoma law, and this does not mean that the Native American tribe now has its own sort of country. I think that's well overblown.
Well, fair question, because, and if I may, over the last few weeks, we've seen a couple of things happen. For example, in South Dakota, one of the tribes there, the Lakota Sioux, tried to block the highways related to COVID, and the governor there, Kristi Noem, says, you can't do that. And there was a back and forth. What I'm saying here is the tribes are trying to assert their authority more and more. On the east side of Glacier National Park, I was there last week, the Blackfeet tribe not opening the entrance at all to the national park. It's a federal United States National Park. They're not opening the road, refusing to. So are we going to see a lot more of this kind of pushback from tribes that believe they've been unfairly treated for the last few hundred years?
I think you are going to see more pushback. I would be very surprised if the court's willing to go as far as some of them are wanting to go. I guess you can never say never, but the extent to which the courts have been willing to respect some of the claims by Native Americans has been much more careful than often the reports say. They've not been willing to go nearly as far as the tribes do. Obviously, we'll have to see, but I would not be as nervous if I was from Oklahoma as some people are making things out to be.
Right, but it does have implications in other places around the country. We'll see how that plays out. Now, going to the faithless electors in the Electoral College, of course, there are, 538 electors that determine who becomes president. The actual election held in December every 4 years. A lot of people still don't realize how the Electoral College works. And last time around, you had several faithless electors, more for Hillary than for Donald Trump, but the headlines wouldn't tell you that. But the Supreme Court said you have to vote for the popular vote in your state, but it also said this. It said you have to follow the state law, if I'm deciphering this properly, which means some of these states that are in this national compact about popular vote, if your state says that you have to vote with the popular vote of the country and not your state, can they direct their electors to now do that?
Well, one thing about that compact is it doesn't go into effect until enough states have joined it to be an Electoral College majority, until they get to 270, which is the majority. So that I think that would be a separate litigation if that ever came up. But I think you're right that there's at least very strong evidence that they would be willing, the court would be willing to go along with it, because the thing they really emphasized is how much free reign the states have to determine how they allocate their electoral votes. and that there isn't a whole lot of constitutional limitations if the states want to do it a certain way. So I think that should have limits. I would have some serious problems if they went that far. But based on how they argued this case, it's not clear that they wouldn't say that that's okay, that, you know, we may not think it's the wisest thing, but if states are basically allowed to do with their electoral votes what they think is best.
Right, and that's my concern. I think the National Popular Vote Compact is a terrible idea because it would disenfranchise voters in some states. If a state voted for Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump won the popular vote or vice versa in this particular case, then the states that voted for Donald Trump would be forced to vote for Hillary Clinton, even though that's not what their states chose. And that's not the intent of the Constitution or the Electoral College. The Electoral College is designed, in my estimation, to protect the smaller states so that they have autonomy to vote for the leadership that they want. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, I think that, one reason for the Electoral College we don't really do as much, which they were trying to argue in this case, which is that, you know, electors used to originally were thought to be a little more independent in their decision making. But I think you're right. The way that it has operated and the way that I think it still is a really good system is it recognizes still that we have federalism, that we are states, that we are a diverse population, and that you need to create a national majority out of states in order to be president, and that actually makes our politics more moderate in a good way and more sensible.
Yeah, you have to win in all sorts of places, big cities and small towns, farm fields and you know, big cities, all of that. You have to win across the country in a variety of places to become president of the United States. That's exactly right. Dr. Adam Carrington, I would expect nothing less but perfection from you, sir. Very well done, as always. Greatly appreciate you being here.
Thank you very much. Hope you all have a good weekend.
You too, my friend. Assistant Professor of Politics, Hillsdale College and the Van Andel Graduate School of Statesmanship, Dr. Adam Carrington here in the No Panic Zone on the Steve Gerber Show on a Friday. Quick break. We'll be right back.